Om sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvinapatitamastu mavidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
We're in verse 229.
Chirabhase svatakopi, chirabhase svatakopi, jvaro nasti yatas chitaha, jvaro nasti yatas chitaha, prakashaika svabhavatvam, prakashaika svabhavatvam, eva drishtan na chetaret, eva drishtan na chetaret. Chidabhase svataha kopi jwaraha na asti yataha chitaha, prakasha eka svabhavatvam, eva drishtam na cha itarat. Itarat. I think I said itarat. It's itarat. Remember that this chapter 7 is an analysis of this one Brihadaranyaka verse. And he's working on now this the second line of this verse, which is Kimichan Kasyakamaya Shariram Anisanjurate. Desiring what and for whose sake and for whose desire? Desiring what and for whose desire does one worry about the body, subtle body, causal body, physical body? What is it that causes one to get so concerned and go through all of the humors or all of the sufferings that each one of these bodies enjoys? So he's gone through all of the different sufferings that the body enjoys, all the jwaras. Jwara means fevers, all of the different kind of fevers that the body enjoys. And for the physical body, it's the three humors of the Ayurvedic humors that cause all kinds of sickness and imbalance. And for the mind, it's kama, krodha, it's desire and anger and all of the anxieties and things that come off of that basic ajnana, that basic ignorance, all of the reactions in the mind. Those are things that are natural to the mind. Illness is natural to the body. And then the causal body, that ajnanam is the cause of all of the problems, because of the self-ignorance, there's the ahankara and all of the misidentifications and then the continuing on of these problems. So even the causal body has all of its problems. So this is what we were going over, one of the things we were going over last time. And then he said in the verse before this, and all of these problems, these jwaras, these fevers — jwara literally means fevers, but it means pains, you know, all of the pains or the discomforts, all of these discomforts that belong to the body and to the subtle body and are innate to the causal body, they're actually innate. And if you take them away, if you were to take all disease and illness away from the body, you'd lose the body too. In other words, they're so innate to the body that you can't get rid of them. You can't get rid of all of the different thoughts and feelings in the mind also. If you get rid of those things, you get rid of the mind, basically, right? So the point he's making is that these things are all inherent to the body, mind, sense organs. Now the thing is, this whole discussion is looking at, but who is the self? What is the nature of the self that is the enjoyer, the bhokta, the enjoyer of the physical body, the enjoyer of the mind with all of its moods and emotions? The one who has the avidya, the one who has the ignorance. Who is the bhokta? Who is actually the enjoyer? So this is all, has all been discussed. So the enjoyer could be, so Vidyaranya makes for three different ideas. Well, the enjoyer, of course, could be what we call the chirabhasa. First he says, no, the enjoyer, could the enjoyer be the atma, the self? Means Brahman, the self which is Satchitananda, the self which is pure consciousness. Could pure consciousness be the enjoyer? That was one idea. Because I am an enjoyer, right? From the standpoint of Ajnanam, I'm the one who has this body. I'm the one who is suffering the body. I'm the one who is suffering all of the different reactions in the mind. I'm the one who is suffering my ignorance. That's the type of enjoyment. It's an enjoyment of suffering. So I'm the one who's having all of these experiences. Who is having it? Is the Atma? It can't be the Atma, who is pure consciousness, who is Kutastha, who is changeless. Remember, we've been through all of that, the revealing of the nature of the Atma. So it can't be the Atma. If it's not the Atma, because the Atma, the self, is changeless, it must be the Chirabhasa. The Chirabhasa is the reflection of consciousness, so to speak. You know, and the reflection of consciousness, it could be that, because actually the mind is always changing, is always going through modifications, and so it's the self reflected in the mind, you know, that must be the enjoyer. But then the problem with that is that self that's reflected in the mind is mithya, has no reality at all if you take it away from the one who's the source of the reflection, so to speak. And so the chidabhasa, the reflection of consciousness, has no being of its own. So if that's the enjoyer, well, the enjoyer is mithya. The enjoyer doesn't have any reality. He says, so it can't just be the chidabhasa alone. If you take away consciousness out of the chidabhasa, then it's gone too. And so it must be either the consciousness plus the chidabhasa. And so this has been the whole discussion. If the enjoyer, the one who experiences all of this, is the consciousness from the chidabhasa and the chidabhasa, the reflection of consciousness, Vidyarani says, yeah, that's what it is. That's where we start. That's what you think you are. You are a conscious being who has all of these experiences. That's the consciousness plus the chidabhasa. That's what makes the enjoyer. That's where Nipunishad starts. But where it ends up is you are the consciousness, not the reflection of consciousness. It's as so simple as saying, for the sun, is the sun the sun, or is it the reflection of the sun? You know, what is real, the sun or the reflection? So here, what is real about me? Am I the self, the conscious being, or am I the conscious being reflected in the mind? Who am I? I have to say I'm the conscious being, not the conscious being that is reflected in the mind and changing in reference to every vritti. Chidabhasa is the conscious being reflected in the mind. So now, this is a problem. What do we mean by reflected in the mind to really understand this chidabhasa? What does it mean? What is the experience in the mind of the chidabhasa? Okay. Because now, so we're just going to spend just a moment to make sure that we all understand this term chidabhasa that Swamiji threw out long ago. He doesn't even use it because it's confusing, reflection of consciousness. But it also has its usefulness. But let's just see what the usefulness is. Your experience of yourself as a conscious being is not the chidabhasa. Consciousness is consciousness. You don't experience as your being a reflection of your being. It is your being that would illumine a so-called reflection of your being. So the self who you are, is not a chidabhasa. The conscious being that you are is Atma, is the Atma, is Brahman. So what do they mean by chidabhasa? Okay, now, so this is what I want you to kind of see in your own mind. When you have a thought, say I have a thought of a pot. You just imagine a pot. Now I have a thought of a pot. And now I am aware of the pot thought, right? I can say that, and you say, yes, I'm aware of the thought pot. Okay. Now what that means is the pot thought is known. It enjoys consciousness, in other words. The pot thought is, in a sense, a manifestation of consciousness. There's no thought, there's nothing about that thought of the pot that is away from consciousness. So far, so good, because I am a conscious being, and now there's the thought of the pot, which is also in consciousness now. So the pot, because the pot is known. Where in that is the chidabhasa, the reflection of consciousness? What do we mean by it? It is really the ahankara that identifies with the consciousness in reference to the pot. It's the ahankara itself, because I bring in another vritti, another thought, that says, I know the pot. So actually there's consciousness, which is the Atma, the Kṛtasya Atma. Right? And then there's the pot, which is known, which is enjoying that consciousness. It's not, let me make this clear. The pot is, the pot thought is known because of the consciousness. Okay, that's clear? Now, this is the little tricky thing. The pot thought is known, the consciousness is known. See that? Consciousness is known, this verb is known, this passive verb, is another word for consciousness. In other words, if I get rid of the pot thought, say if I get rid of all thoughts, what is left is consciousness. And what is the experience of consciousness without any duality at all? It's just is known. It's the isness which is known. That's what we mean by self-evident. Swaprakasha, it's self-luminous, it's self-evident. If something is self-luminous and self-evident, it is known without a knower. It itself is the very subject, it is the very content of the knower. And what is that experience? It is known. So consciousness is the experience of knownness. It's the same thing. So I can say that it is consciousness or it is known. Both are just referring, there's words that are referring to the self-luminosity of my being. Okay? So now this consciousness, which is known, in this consciousness, a thought modification of vritti comes, of a pot. Now here's the pot vritti, the pot modification. Now that manifestation of knowledge, it is known. If I get rid of the thought, the is known doesn't go. The is knownness, the knownness, the consciousness, the self-evident nature belongs to the consciousness itself. So the thought comes, it is known, the thought goes away, then whatever there is known, whatever there is known, whatever there is known, if nothing is there, there's just is known, that there is just consciousness. So you can never escape the is known experience because that is the very swarupa, that is the very nature of consciousness, the self-evident consciousness itself. That's the Atma, that's the Kṛtasya Atma, that's the changeless Atma, your changeless self that never goes anywhere at all, never modifies at all. Okay, so now you have this is known, the consciousness which is known, self-evident, and the thought now also is known. But now there is a vritti that comes, the ahankara, the I notion, that is relating to the consciousness which the thought is enjoying. It says, I am the knower of the thought. So it's relating, when the thought, you have the name and form thought, right? The pot, that's a name and form. And that pot has for its substance consciousness. So the ahankara says, I am the knower of the pot. Even though there isn't any knower there. There's no knower experience, there's only the known experience. But the ahankara, the I notion, breaks it up. And it says, I, being the conscious being, because actually I am, that's the truth, I am Brahman, it now says, I am the consciousness in reference to, I am the consciousness of the knower in reference to the consciousness of the known. There is no knower and known. Is anybody following this? So the chit-abhasa is the consciousness in reference to the vritti. In reality, there's no chit-abhasa. The chit-abhasa is the reflection of consciousness is there because of the vritti. If the vritti is there, the vritti is known. The knownness of the vritti is what we call the chit-abhasa, the reflection of consciousness. It's only a way of labeling the manifest knowledge, which is the form of a vritti. Any vritti is manifest knowledge. So what do I mean by manifest knowledge? If I ask you to think of a pot, your form, whatever is in your unconscious, being held in your memory banks, some pot form comes. We all have our own pot forms. Okay? So your pot form comes. If I ask you to think of a car form comes. That's manifest knowledge. When it's not there, it's sitting in the memory, unmanifest. But when it comes, when the form comes, it's manifest knowledge. Now, manifest knowledge, what do we mean? It is known. Right? When the form comes, it is known. That means that it is enjoying consciousness. So the chit-abhasa is the consciousness which the vritti, from the standpoint of the vritti, and the ahankar, the I notion, comes and identifies with the consciousness in relationship to the vritti and creates this knower. If the knower is nothing but the ahankar, really. So this is what we mean by the chit-abhasa. There's consciousness, there's a vritti. The chit-abhasa is the consciousness in reference to the vritti. See what I mean? So in a sense, there is no reflection of consciousness. We create that because we use this language because there is a vritti, even though the vritti, the thought modification, is mitya. It is there, and it is enjoying consciousness because it is known. So the chit-abhasa is that knownness. The ahankara identifies with it, and I become the I relate to the consciousness that the vritti is knowing, and I become the consciousness. The name and form of the vritti becomes the known, and so this knower known is created. Now, when a person gains knowledge, the ahankara becomes the I notion that is really this chit-abhasa. It's a good word for the chit-abhasa, for the reflection of consciousness, because the ahankara, the I notion, is what's identifying with it. That consciousness that is related to the vritti also doesn't change. The consciousness that the vritti enjoys doesn't change. The names and forms change. The consciousness per se doesn't change, nor does the consciousness what the ahankara relates to in reference to the vritti, that doesn't change either. This is a parsing that Vidyaranya does that we don't usually do, but it's interesting. So here in this verse, he says, in the chit-abhasa, in the reflex, this is for the person who's understood, in the chit-abhasa, there is no fever. Means the fever, these fevers, belong to the body in terms of illness. They belong to the mind in terms of the lack of shanti or the lack of shanti, the lack of dhamma, the lack of shama. That's upsetting if you have a lack of these things. And also the positive of having anger and having desire and all of these things. These are fevers that belong to the mind, right? These fevers don't belong to the chit-abhasa. They don't belong to the consciousness. They belong to what the consciousness is illumining. Okay? So here's his thinking. If you have the sun that's reflecting in a bucket of water, okay? The water is dirty. Okay? The sun, the kutastha atma, isn't taking on the dirt of the water. Right? The reflection of the sun in the dirty water is also not taking on the dirty water. Right? That's just the reflection of the sun. The dirty water belongs to the dirty water. Right? And so neither the sun nor the reflection of the sun enjoys the qualities of the dirty water. And so now, here you have a chit-abhasa reflects you've got the vritti. You've got the consciousness. You've got the fact that the vritti is known because of the consciousness. Neither the consciousness which the vritti is enjoying, you know, in reference to the vritti, nor the consciousness enjoys any type of fever. So this is what he's saying. So he goes on to say, why is that? He says, because yetaha prakasha eka svabhavatvam chittaha, because for consciousness, because the nature of consciousness is only enjoys the single nature of luminosity of consciousness. That is its only nature, is consciousness. So prakasha means luminosity, eka svabhava, because consciousness only has one nature. And that nature is prakasha, the consciousness which it is. So consciousness isn't going to take on the nature of any of the things that are being illumined. Whether you create this mitya chit-abhasa, or just from the standpoint of consciousness itself, consciousness does not take on the qualities of the things that are illumined, the things that come and go. So, I'll tell you, Swamiji doesn't deal with this because really there's no chitabhasa, there's only consciousness. Right? But you can understand the chitabhasa, the reflection of consciousness, if you think of the ahankara. Because the ahankara creates this illusion of a chitabhasa. I know this, I know that, I enjoy this, I enjoy that. It creates knowership, right? And so this is a false construct, right? So this false construct is created by identifying with the conscious aspect of the vritti. Every thought modification you have has a name and form and consciousness. It has sat-chit, every thought. The common denominator of every thought is consciousness existence. Amness, or it is, every thought is, and every thought is known. That's the sat-chit. So in any vritti, you have the name and form of the vritti and the consciousness. The ahankara identifies with the sat-chit in the vritti. That's the chitabhasa. Because it's identifying with the consciousness that belongs, that is totally identified, associated with the vritti. And that's the good old problem. This is, we give existence to, we give existence itself to all of these things that we perceive. It's not that this table enjoys the noun existence. It's that this table is, because there's a table, it is. Right? It's as though the isness belongs to the table rather than the table and this creation having isness as its substrate being. Right? So that's the whole problem, that there's a total identity with the sat-chit, of the sat-chit with all of the names and forms that we experience. Because that identity is there in reference to your mind, right? You identify with the consciousness because you're not going to identify with an object that you are looking at. You identify with the conscious aspect. And that's the chitabhasa. He says, so even the chitabhasa, for somebody who understands this, he says, even that chitabhasa in no way has any type of fever. It's just consciousness itself. And that's something that's clearly... It's clearly known that chitabhasa, right, is only consciousness. It's not going to be the other. The other is the thing that's being illumined, right? So you take yourself to be consciousness, not the thing that you're looking at. So he's going to go on more with this. Chitabhase pisam bhavyaha. Chitabhase pisam bhavyaha. Jvara sakshinika katha. Jvara sakshinika katha evamapyekatamene chirabhaso hyavidyaya chirabhaso hyavidyaya chirabhase api asambhavyaha jvaraha sakshinika katha evam api ekatamene chirabhasaha hi avidyaya. He says, even in the chitabhasa, these fevers are not possible. Right? Because the chitabhasa is only consciousness. Right? So, if it can't even be there in the chitabhasa, in the reflection of consciousness, all of these problems that belong to the body, the mind, the body and the mind, and the causal body, then kakata, what to speak of in the sakshi? In Atma, in the Atma itself, in the Sakshi. If you can't put them in the chitabhasa, which is identified with the mind, you know, which is so associated with the mind and the body, then how could you even begin, even think to put it in the Kutista Atma, which he's calling Sakshi here. So he says, evam api. Even though it's like this, even though this should be obvious, the chitabhasa does take it to be one, does identify itself. Ekatam means it does take itself to be one with the body and the mind and the sense organs, all of the problems. That's why I can say, I am agitated, I am hurt, I am unhappy, and I'm happy now for the moment. I'm this way, I'm that way, my body is healthy, this body is of such and such age, this body is such and such a gender, I am like this, I am like that. I take myself to be this. How can it possibly do that, even when that it's an impossibility? It can only do it, he says, he avidyaya, because of avidya. This is what avidya is. Avidya is what allows the mind to take itself to be one with the consciousness. On any type of viveka, once any type of discrimination is there, this all falls apart. But until discrimination is there, the mind naturally takes itself to be one with the consciousness that illumines it. And this is the power of avidya. And to just understand, why shouldn't it? Because your mind is never away from consciousness. Just like the pot, why wouldn't the pot take itself to be clay? It is clay. It's never away from clay. So it takes itself to be clay. It doesn't realize that the clay is independent of it. It doesn't realize that clay doesn't need it. It, the pot, needs the clay completely. The clay doesn't need the pot at all. The clay is independent. That's our problem here. The mind takes itself to be the consciousness, right? But it doesn't realize the consciousness is independent of it. Every thought I have enjoys consciousness. Every thought I have enjoys existence. My subtle body pervades this body. So as long as this body is here, it also enjoys consciousness. It enjoys existence. The sense of touch is running all the way through it. You know, I have sense organs. Sense organs are enlivened by the mind. The mind is never away from consciousness. So, of course, I think this body is me. The mind says, I am indwelling in this body. This body is me. Then it goes on. There's a bouncing ball effect. If this body is me, then I am subject to death because the body is subject to death. Right? And the body, you know, as long as the body is, it is conscious. So why wouldn't I take it to be me? Why wouldn't the mind take the consciousness to be it? Of course it does, because it can never even conceive of an experience without consciousness. Consciousness is absolutely intrinsic to the mind, right? But you pull the consciousness away, the mind is gone, right? But then consciousness does not need the mind. That's the difference. The mind is dependent on consciousness. Consciousness is not dependent on the mind. That's why this anvaya vyatireka, when this is, that is, when this is not, that is not. That's the anvaya, when this is, that is. When the mind is, consciousness is. Right? So now the mind should say that therefore, you know, when the mind is, consciousness is, therefore the mind is consciousness. But then the vyatireka, it should be able to say, and when the mind is not, consciousness is not. Let's do it like this. When the thought is, consciousness is. It's easier for you to see it so clearly. When the thought is, consciousness is. When the thought is gone, is consciousness gone? It isn't. This is really, this anvaya vyatireka is really an Achilles heel to ajnanam, to ignorance. Because you can differentiate yourself. Just this one thing can help you to differentiate what always stays and what goes. You stay. Anything that goes, goes. It's gone, it's not you. If it can go, it's not you. Yeah. But it's hard, the mind doesn't, has to be shown this. When it shows this, it's a kind of a no-brainer. But until it's shown, all the mind just thinks I'm the conscious being and I belong to this body and it gives body the consciousness. And as long as I have this body, I'll be conscious. When the body dies, then consciousness will be gone. But there's no differentiation into the internal experience, subject-object experience. There's something about you that is not subject to any type of coming and going. That is the Atma. That's the Kutastha Atma. The consciousness which survives all experience. Even waking, dream, deep sleep, those experiences negate each other. Consciousness is there as the self of all three of them. All of these prakriyas, all of these teaching methodologies are pointing to help your mind recognize the reality of your experience. That's why the Upanishads are a pramana. There's a means of knowledge. They're pointing in many, many different ways to your experience to help you to recognize me that is not bound. The me that is that yourself, the conscious being, that the mind and body say, I am. That one. The one that the body and mind, this body-mind complex, says, I am a conscious being. That consciousness is independent of the body-mind. The body-mind is not dependent of that consciousness, but the consciousness is independent of it. So that, now you have to look and see, is that right? What would show me that it's right, that that's true, is that all the experiences of the body-mind complex, of my knowledges and ignorances, of all of my identifications, all of them go on changing. I remain as the constant. I am the constant luminary, the consciousness in which all of these experiences keep on coming and going. So all of the Upanishads, all of these Prakarana Granthas are pointing with all of these different prakriyas to make you kind of wake up to your experience, to recognize the experience. They are not giving you an experience. The Upanishads are not giving you an experience. They're pointing to your experience, differentiating your experience, making you understand the satya mitya relationship. Satya mitya is the mitya is dependent on the satyam for its being. The satyam is not dependent on the mitya for its being. Pot is mitya, clay is satyam. Clay is the truth, the reality, the vastu, the thing that's actually there. The pot is what depends on the clay for its being. That is mitya. It has no being of its own. Rope, snake. Snake is mitya. It totally depends for its existence on the rope. Rope is satyam. It's free of the snake. Right? It doesn't depend on the snake at all. That's independent. So here, in those are drishtantas, they're limited. The satyam mitya in that is just showing the relationship between those two. Here, what is satyam, what is mitya in my experience? In this moment, in this moment of experience, what is satyam, what is mitya? Consciousness itself is satyam. The body, mind, sense organs depend totally for their being on the conscious being itself. Conscious being, me, is satyam, because it doesn't come and go. The body, the mind, the sense organs are all time-bound. They're all subject to continual change. They come and go. My experience of them goes on changing. That's mitya. If it changes, goes in and comes from non-existence, goes into non-existence. It's got a prior condition of not being there, a posterior condition of not being there. That means it doesn't have any being of its own. What is it depending on? That's me. That is the self. This I need to recognize over and over and over again in many different ways. And so here he says, it's the avidya. Avidya is the problem. I mean, in fact, avidya, ignorance itself, is the only problem. Atma, yourself, has no problem. The ignorance, self-ignorance, is what creates this ahankara, this identification with the fevers. The body, mind, sense organs, and all of their fevers. It's the identification that is creating the problem. I am this. And that I am this is brought about by the avidya. And so now he tells how that avidya works. He says, if I don't do five verses, we'll be 5 months.
Yeah.
Okay. It's okay. Sakshi says, Psalm 67, madhyasya sveno pete vapustraye sveno pete vapustraye tatsarvam vastavam swasya tatsarvam vastavam swasya swarupam iti manyate swarupam iti manyate sakshi satyatvam adyasya svena upeta vastutraye vapuhu traye tatsarvam vastavam swasya swarupam iti manyate. He says, adyasya, having superimposed the sakshi, the consciousness, which is the satyatvam, the truth, the true nature of the witness, which is the kutesta atma, having superimposed the true nature of the witness onto the three bodies. Vapuhu means body. Three, the set of three bodies, the physical body, the subtle body, the causal body. So having superimposed the truth of the oneself, the sakshi, onto the three bodies, which is associated with oneself, like I said, with yourself, this is my body, right? So I've superimposed, the mind really has superimposed the sakshi, the witness, onto this body that I'm associated with. I've superimposed the witness, the sakshi, onto the mind. I've superimposed it onto the causal body. I become that. Who's doing the superimposing? Not the Atma. The self doesn't do anything. Consciousness is just consciousness. It's innocent. Okay? But the mind is the one that suffers, is suffering the avidya. The mind suffering the avidya says, it's the one that does this superimposition that says, the mind says, I am the conscious being. If I say, I am the conscious being, then consciousness has been superimposed by me onto the mind. See what I mean? So the mind becomes the conscious being, and then the conscious being gains the qualities of the mind. The body becomes the conscious being gains the qualities of the body. Right? The conscious being becomes subject to old age and death. I myself become subject to all of the different vrittis, thought modifications of the mind, agitation and suffering and all of these type of things. I become that. That's what we mean by superimposition. When you think of a dhyasa superimposition, think red hot iron ball. That's it. That's the example we use, where the iron, round iron ball becomes red and hot. Because of the fire. It's as though, just imagine you're ignorant of fire, you're ignorant of an iron ball, but in its own right, you see a red hot iron ball. It's just one thing to you. That's mutual superimposition. The iron ball becomes hot and brilliant red, and fire becomes round and heavy. That's the red hot iron ball. So this body becomes a conscious, existent being, and I become subject to death. Mutual superimposition. So, having superimposed the self onto the bodies, then what happens? Tet sarvam vastavam swasya surupam iti manyate. Then the person thinks, the agnani, will consider, all of this body, mind, the body and the mind, all of these things with all of the with all of their fevers, with all of their problems, that is my real nature. Tetsarvam, all of this, these three bodies, vastavam, swasya srupam. Vastavam means real, true. This is my true nature. That's what the person says. This is who I am. Mm-hmm. Right? That's what they consider. I am this. This is who I am. If you ask anybody, who are you? Who are you really? Say, who are you really? Well, I'm really, this person of such and such an age. These physical ailments, and have this mind, that causes this and that problems, have these good qualities. This is honestly, most of them, this is really who I am. I'm telling you the truth. That's the superposition is no joke. Superposition means this is really what you take yourself to be. Mm. And but we have to be compassionate about it. If you see a red-hot iron ball and you've never seen fire by itself or iron by itself, what is there is a red-hot iron ball. That's what it is. Somebody has to come along and separate the two from you and then put them back together. And they say, oh my gosh, you know, this is iron and this is fire and they're appearing together as one thing. So the teacher here, the Upanishad, has to come and separate, you know, pull you apart and make you recognize yourself, the conscious being, which is the very swarupa, the steady reality of all of your experience. It's what is actually here, but what is changeless, the very being, the very substance of all of your experience. And then you have to be able to differentiate that from all of the mitya. That is, and really, not that hard to do. It's not that hard to do in this sense. What is mitya, dependent on you, on your being for its reality, is continually changing without exception. Every part of the mitya, every part of your body, your sense organs, your mind, is in flux. They are experiences that you can be without. It's another beautiful way to look at it. Any experience that you can be without for any reason, that is not you. Because if you can, it's gone. That experience is gone. You're still here. So even looking at it as experiences that the world has to offer, the body has to offer, experiences that the mind has to offer, the waking state has to offer, the deep sleep state has to offer, the dream state has to offer, right? You can be without these experiences. You're not the one that you can be without. Your swarupa needs to be there, or the experience, or it's not your experience. You're not present to it. So this is the viveka. The viveka is not about creating a new experience, but finding in your own experience what never moves, what never changes. Meditation is very good for that, because you can just slow everything down. You can play with your mind, try to make it cover yourself or get rid of yourself. See what you can get rid of in meditation. It's a good meditation. See what experience you can get rid of. You can get rid of this thought, you can get rid of this feeling, you can get rid of the perception of the body, you can get rid of all kinds of different breeds, all kinds of things you can get rid of. What can't you get rid of? That's you. The one that no matter what, even if you try to put a bag over your head or imagine non-existence, you can only imagine non-existence of things that can be eliminated. You imagine, just try to imagine yourself as non-existent, and then you will remain there illumining that imagination. That's you. So these are all really nice meditations to do to help you to make this discrimination. Let's do this next verse. Etasmin prantikaleyam Etasmin prantikaleyam Shirireshu jvaratsvata Shirireshu jvaratsvata Swayameva Chwaramiti Swayameva Chwaramiti Manyatehi Kutumbivat Manyatehi Kutumbivat. So now he says Ekasmin Vrantikale Ayam Sharireshu Jwaratsu Ata Swayameva Chwarami Iti Manyatehi Kutumbivat. He says, for this guy, the one who's suffering from ignorance, he says, when this delusion, when this error is there, etasmin brantikale, at the time of this error, this delusion, this person, sharireshu, in the bodies which are juretsu, which are burning with fever, with their suffering, so in these bodies which are burning with their fever, what does he think? For the, he says, he considers this. He says, Swayam eva jvarami. He says, I myself am suffering with fever. Right? At the time of the delusion, right? When in the presence of these bodies, which are all burning with fever, this body is burning with its illness, and the mind is burning up because it's upset about being ill. All these fevers are active. So as all of these things, the body is in trouble and the mind is in trouble. And what does this person consider? He says, I myself am burning up in fever. Swayam eva jwarami. I'm burning up in fever. He says he considers himself like this, just like a kutumbivat. He says, just like a kutumbivat, just like a member of a family, okay, would consider. So now we have to do the next verse, because he gives the example of this. What do you mean, just like a member of the family? What does that mean? He says, putradareshu tapyatsu, putradareshu tapyatsu, tapaniti vratayata, tapaniti vratayata, manyate purushas tadvat, manyate purushas tadvat, abhaso pyabhimanyate, abhaso pyabhimanyate. He says, putra dhareshu tapyatsu tapami iti vritayata manyate purushaha tadvat abhasaha api abhimanyate. He says, just as yata vrita means just as in vain, or just as, and it's kind of a in vain or mistakenly, a person will say, when their son or wife, putra is son, daughter is wife. So when their son or wife is burning with fever, tapyatsu, when the son or wife is burning up with fever or is suffering, you know, they're suffering. So when the son or wife is suffering, then that person says, I am suffering. Their son is suffering. The son is sick and ill. The person or is suffering from something. I am suffering. The wife is ill. I am suffering. So just as they make that mistake, they consider, the purusha considers himself to be suffering in that way. Then that, like that, the abhasa, the chit abhasa, also imagines, I am suffering when the body is suffering. I am suffering when the mind is suffering, right? If the mind is having some problems because of the total identification, I take myself to be having those problems. Body is having some problems because of this total identification, I am having these problems. So just like in a family, especially they're talking from the standpoint of the father here, the father, my son, you know, my son is suffering, he's so unhappy, I'm just suffering so much. My wife is suffering and she's hurting in this way. I am hurting so much. So because of the total identification with the family member, you take on that suffering to yourself. So forgetting that you are you and the person is the person. That's actually kind of a nice example, because the child is out here and the wife is out here and the family members are out here and I'm seeing their suffering. But because I'm so identified with them, right, I take on their suffering to myself. Where actually, you know, you're not the one that's suffering. They're suffering, right? So it's the same here, which, in fact, it's the fact, this is an important thing to notice. When your body is suffering, the body is suffering. Say it's sick. Say it's got the flu. Say it has a, say it's got some disease. It's suffering. It's got a broken limb. It is suffering, you know. But yourself, the one that is present, is not suffering. That's the viveka, to recognize the one that's illuminating the suffering. It's not saying that the body, in a body, say for a mahatma, a jnani, you know, you break your arm. It's not that the jnani doesn't feel the broken arm, or if the body has the flu, it's not that you don't experience the flu, but you... Do you recognize the difference between your being and the body that has the flu? You recognize the difference between your being, the conscious being that illumines the upset mind, you know, and the upset mind. There's a difference. Mm-hmm. You know, I am totally present and pervasive to to the upset mind, and I am not taking on the qualities of the upset mind. That's the truth. That's what needs to be discerned. If that is discerned, then the mind, the upset mind, the hurt body, have a home. You know, there's an inner friend. Really, the self of the inner friend is the Atma, because the self is always stable. It is always the same. It's always abiding in its own swarupa, in its own nature, amidst all of these changing experiences that are close to us. Right? They are close. I mean, as long as you have a body, you're going to feel that body. As long as you have a mind, you're going to feel the mind. It's just that's true that for a jnani, the quality of your mind does change. It becomes much more peaceful. The reason, though, that it becomes peaceful is because the ananda, the fullness, the happiness that you had thought belonged to the world, and so you were having to try to find, to manipulate the world in order to get it. Let me have this so I can be happy. You know, well, actually, I need this too so I can be happy. It goes on and on. You've discovered the source of that ananda to be the Atma. And so now the mind, once the mind recognizes that, once it's discovered, it's broken through that illusion, the mind now is not at risk all the time of its fullness, its wholeness, its happiness being taken away by this illusion. And so the mind rests now. It has its ananda, it has its source of ananda, and now it can live in the world, live out the prarabdha, you know, and be in the world doing the things that are there to be done. Even in reference to itself and its own maturing process, it can have some compassion. Right? To take care of the mind. If the mind is hurt, take care of the body because the body is hurt. It can have some compassion because the ananda is not away. The ananda is not only not away, it can't be lost. Right? It's not away, nor can it be taken away, nor can you do anything bad to lose it. Say you're a bad girl. Yeah. It can't be taken away. The ananda will support the poor bad girl that's in trouble. Then that bad girl can, or bad boy can go, you know, and soothe itself in the ananda that is not changed at all. So, okay, let's stop there. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om. Say like this, the chit-abhasa is the consciousness that's being pointed out by the upadhi, but takes it as identified with the upadhi. So I don't see that there's any chit-abhasa that is different than the atma. The consciousness itself is only the atma. But then, here is the mitya, here's the vritti, the upadhi. The upadhi is there. Even though it's mitya, it's still there. that upadhi enjoys consciousness. So the consciousness from the standpoint of the upadhi, so that the mind can say, I am a conscious being or I am a knower, that's the chittabhasa. The problem comes in is when you try to think that there's here I am as the jiva. You say, I'm the chittabhasa. And then there's some atma illumining the chittabhasa. There's no other atma illumining the chittabhasa. So the chittabhasa is just the consciousness in reference to, from the standpoint of the vritti, of the maya.
Could you say that the chittabhasa is like an existential term and the upadhi is like an ontological? I mean, it seems like they're...
No, because I think they're actually trying to point out, because there's an ahankara, the ahankara, the I notion, is what creates, in a sense, what creates the chittabhasa. Well, that's not quite right.
Well, it's a misidentification now. It's not the creation of anything.
Well, see, if you have a vritti, say you've got the pot thought, there's nama-rupa, there's the name and form that thought is enjoying, you know, that the manifest knowledge. But the sat-chit, the consciousness and the existence that it enjoys is also there. So maybe you have to define those terms. You might be onto something there. The existence and the consciousness that are attributed right to the vritti that is there is the chittabhasa. Even though this is the tricky thing, is that there is no second consciousness. Like if you've got, this is the problem. You have the sun, you have the reflection of the sun. The sun and the reflection of the sun are different. Right there, as you can see, there's a reflection, there's the sun up there. But here, there's not consciousness and a reflection of consciousness with something in between. You've got the sun, you've got space, you've got the water bucket and the reflection. There's a lot of distance between the sun up there and the reflection down here. Here, between the vritti and the gutasta, the Atma, there is no distance. But the vritti is as though enjoying its own existence, its own knownness. That's why we say reflection. You know, if we say this is known. But there's no isness or knownness that really belongs to this. So it's an illusion, it's a bhranti, it's an error.
So knownness doesn't belong to mind.
It doesn't belong to mind. Existence doesn't belong. Existence and consciousness are the Atma. There isn't a second experience of existence or consciousness. And there need not be, because all that's here, the very substratum is exist. But okay, this is another way to say it. All that's here is existence, consciousness, plus name and form. But your mind, the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, enjoys consciousness in a different way than this table. This table enjoys being known, and the table is, and it is known. But the table doesn't enjoy knowership. Whereas the mind, even though the mind is known, right, it's subtle, we say it reflects consciousness because it enjoys knowership. Like, that's what we call chittabhasa. But we say the sattva, rajas and tamas, the sattva reflects consciousness and allows for knowership. But when you analyze the sattva, there is no separate consciousness again. But there's a difference between a mind and sense organs that are able to know, and a rug and a table and a book that are not able to know.
So from the standpoint of the jnani, the chittabhasa doesn't exist. But from the standpoint of the...
Well, we don't say that it doesn't exist. We just say, we have to understand what it's referring to. Like say if we, because I was talking about ahankara, but let's look at it in terms of this subtle body. Let's look at it in terms of the mind versus the table. I have a mind, the table doesn't have a mind. What difference does it make? Well, the table can't be a knower enjoyer. I can be a knower enjoyer. We don't say that the table is. We don't say that the rug is a knower enjoyer. So what's the difference? The mind has a, the mind reflects consciousness. This is how we're using the word reflect, right? The mind reflects consciousness, it's what we call chittabhasa, in a way that the table does not. But now, what do we mean by reflect? Does the mind have itself have an experience of consciousness that is other than the consciousness? Like there's a difference between the sun and the reflection of the sun. There's a distance between the two. So are you the reflection of the sun, or are you the sun? See the problem?
I do, but I see, I'm thinking about like Drisha Viveka, so there's that point when you're discriminating the seer from the seen.
Uh-huh.
Then finally, then you come to this other prakriya, which is like, Kariyakana Sangata, where then there's a collapse, you know, the cause and the effect. The seer seeing then collapses. So it seems like from the standpoint of the jnani, then these words are really words for describing the vision of the samsari. You know, this.
All of it becomes mithya. Yeah. Everything becomes mithya. And you recognize, this is what he's saying, you start out with this combination of the chittabhasa and the kutastha atma. That's what you start out with. And in the end, you just have the kutastha atma. The chittabhasa and everything becomes mithya. So, like for instance, if I do the drisha, I start out with the conscious being, that being this body, mind, sense organs. I am me, and you are all the seen. I am the seer, you are the seen. But then with analysis, it turns out, well, this body is also seen. So the body now becomes part of the seen along with the rest of the world. And I am the seer. So now my sense organs are the seer, and the body is the seen, and the world is the seen. But then I realize, oh, but my sense organs are also seen. I know if they work or not. So now the sense organs join the world, and the mind becomes the seer. And then I said, oh, well, my mind is also known. So now the mind joins. And then I say, well, the ahankara also is known. And so now that is given over to the creation. Now I'm left with just the sakshi, the witness. But where is any witnessing? Right? Because actually, everything, the mind, which is a knower, enjoyer, the sense organs, which are seers, perceivers, all of those things are objectified. And what is left is just me, the consciousness. Right? And so, that consciousness is not a seer, is not an enjoyer. You know, it's not a thinker, it's not a doer, because all of those things have been objectified and have been recognized as mithya. You see what I mean? So this chittabhasa, it's tricky because it's a word that comes to differentiate the subtle body from, or the mind from things that aren't mind. So they use this word reflection of consciousness, chittabhasa. There's no better word. It's fine. It's fine, but you have to keep explaining it and make yourself see what they're talking about in terms of your experience.
Is the definition then that of the mind, that it's mind? Is that right?
The chittabhasa is the. It's the identification of consciousness with the mind.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that different from the sakshi?
The what?
The sakshi.
Sakshi means witness. The witness will always resolve into the kutastha, mm-hmm. into the changeless atma. Because when you do a sakshi, a wit means witness. You have to be something that you're witnessing. So the sakshi is what's left after drik drisha viveka. After the seer seeing differentiation, the sakshi is what's left, the witness is what's left. But then after you remove all of the things that you've differentiated yourself from, all you have is pure consciousness. And is pure consciousness a witness of anything? It's just consciousness. You need, if you don't have a mind, there's no thinker, there's no enjoyer, there's no doing. If you don't have a body, if you don't have sense organs, if you don't have a mind, then there's nothing for the subject-object relationship. There's no doer, there's no enjoyer, none of these things. There's just the witness. What is the witness? The witness isn't witnessing anything.
Okay, so it's not, the word sakshi isn't specifically a relationship to the is known or to the object.
It is. The sakshi is the word that you use for the atma when you're doing the seer-seeing differentiation. The atma still continues to remain as the sakshi until you've differentiated every upadhi that's possible to a differentiation. The body goes, the sense organs goes, the mind goes, the ahankara goes, all the emotions go, all the experiences go, all of the labels go, all those things are gone. And now that what you've been calling the sakshi, the atma is a sakshi, now is not a sakshi anymore. The sakshi gets resolved into just pure consciousness.
So could you say the chittabhasa then is sort of like a kind of sakshi or a subtype of sakshi? Like the sakshi in relationship specifically to the chit?
It's only in relationship to the chit because the mind...
Right, that's... If it's sort of like... Because it seems to me that when we're talking about the chittabhasa, we are talking about something... the reflection being the witness, or the power to be able to witness whatever is known.
Okay, say the sakshi as atma is illumining the mind. Okay, so we call it now the sakshi because of the atma, the mind is known. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So we say okay because of the self, the mind is known. Therefore, the mind is the self is the witness of the mind. That's how sakshi comes in. So far, so good? Now we realize that, okay, because the self illumines the mind, it's differentiated from the mind. And so now we're going to take away the mind, which is not the self. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, is the conscious self a sakshi?
Not anymore.
No. Was it before?
Not really.
No, because it wasn't. It wasn't because we call it a sakshi only in reference to the mind, but then when you take the mind away, you realize, oh, it's not a sakshi, it's just pure consciousness. Because when you think of witness, there's an act of doership in that. Knowership. I am witnessing something. When you say sakshi, I'm looking at something. I'm the one that illumines the mind as though I'm looking at the mind. But if you take the mind away, the sakshi is still there, but it's not a sakshi of anything, just consciousness. So what you discover is that your being is just the me. You are not doing anything. You're not doing an act of witnessing. You're completed. The self, its nature is just pure consciousness, pure me. And if you do, in meditation, say you do japa, you recognize this, that you ask yourself, have your mind ask you, okay, am I doing anything? Am I looking at anything? Am I engaged in illumining the mind? Is that these thoughts are coming, and all the thoughts that are coming, they're known, this thought is known, and this thought is known. Just ask yourself, am I doing anything to illumine that thought? Or is the thought simply illumined? You know, I'm not doing anything. It's not that I'm knowing the thought, because the thought's coming into my range, the thought is known. But I'm not doing any act of knowing. I'm just pure awareness. You have to, if these words don't work, you have to actually see it in contemplation. It becomes easy to see. Even right now, you can say, just if you tune into your own being, am I doing anything? Am I knowing anything? I'm just complete into myself. I'm not doing anything at all. Do I feel a lack because I'm not doing anything? You've never done anything. You've heard any time. You just have to notice that. You have to notice the fact of it. That you're stable. Stable and whole and complete and abiding, and nobody can do anything about it. It's a you're a completed state. We don't have that feeling, oh no, I'm not doing anything. That's how you would have to feel right now. Oh no, I'm not doing anything. You don't feel that at all. It's because yourself is whole. You know? Yourself is the whole, actually. There's nothing missing in your nature to need something else to add to it. And the more the mind recognizes that fact, the fact of it, the more at peace it becomes. You know? It relaxes into that.